This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 21, Episode 8. This is Writing Excuses.
Setting expectations.
Tools, not rules.
For writers, by writers. I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dong Lun.
I'm Erin.
And today we're going to talk about setting expectations. So we have been looking at the things that you need at the beginning of a story. And after taking a little break to go dive into my short story, we are back and we are talking about one of the specific things that you need to try to accomplish in the beginning, which is to set the expectations of a reader. So when we say expectations, like, what does that cover?
I mean, I think that covers everything from what is the shape of this story. I think that's the thing I say the most when talking about openings is this didn't communicate to me what the shape of the story is to come. What kind of things are we doing? Is this, and that includes genre, but that also includes sort of just like a hint of overall plot structure, you know? And so those expectations for me are really like, what kind of ride am I about to go on? I think of it as a roller coaster and I look ahead and I can see, oh, there's a loop-de-loop, there's a drop. I don't know what that's going to feel like when I get there and there's stuff I can't see. But like, okay, that's the kind of thing this is versus one of those ones that just goes straight up and drops you right back down, you know?
I have a couple questions about that. Let's interrogate that.
I love roller coasters.
No, I'm curious, like, when you say beginning in this case, like, how large of a piece are you, like, does it take for you to get that kind of, is this a one-page thing? Is this, like, a three-chapter thing? You know, how do they set that for you?
I think this is more of, like, first couple scenes thing, you know? So not necessarily first page. Like, first page is so much about setting a vibe and tone in a lot of ways, as we were talking about in the last episode or a couple episodes ago. But I think in terms of setting expectations, I think really by the end of the first chapter, depending on how you've structured your book, I kind of need a sense of not necessarily who the protagonist is, but also like a feeling of like the kind of protagonist we're going to have, right? So if your opening is a cold open with a character who's not going to recur, I think that's totally fine. But then the action of that should give me some indication of what kind of story I'm in. So I think of Six of Crows as a great example of this, which starts with a POV character who, spoiler, is dead by the end of that prologue or first chapter or whatever it is. But I get the kind of sense, it introduced me to the magic system, to the setting, to the world, but also the like, oh, this is going to be a story of a certain kind of crime story, a certain kind of about resisting oppression, and a certain kind of like violence will be present in the story. And I'm like, okay, I know what ride I'm on now. And so by the end of that, so my expectations feel really thoroughly set by the end of that. And then the rest of the book continues to deliver on that.
So I'm going to answer that from short stories because I think it's the same thing, but I think one of the places that people get into trouble when they're going from novels to short stories or the other way around is that it is about proportions.
Yeah.
So, you know, the end of the first scene of a novel is like 1% of a novel-ish. Mm. And this is a really, like, I've pulled that number out of my ass, but, you know, it's a really small proportion of that novel. And when you look at the first 1% of a short story, you're looking at the first half page, sometimes the first full page, where you've got something that tells the reader the same things, but you're just having to do it a lot more economically. Mm-hmm. So I think of it like if you're making a layer cake and you decide to cut the recipe down to make some cupcakes, it's the same proportions, you just aren't using as much flour for that cupcake as you do for the layer cake.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm thinking about the same things. Like, but for I specifically try to get that microcosm in within the first half page because I also know how editors read when they're reading slush. Mm-hmm. And that first half page is where they have to make the decision about whether to turn the page or move to the next manuscript.
I also think that's how readers read, though, right?
Yeah.
I do think readers make their judgment. I think they're actually even meaner than industry folks are because we're in it with like a hope of like that we want this story to be good. We want to be excited about this. And so when we're reading slush, I do think there is a little bit more generosity afforded than sometimes a reader who's like, I'm not paying for that. You know what I mean? That's my general impression from talking to readers of like, whoa, you guys are brutal.
So. Yeah, I mean, I certainly, you know, when I've been in a brick and mortar store and pulling something off the shelf to decide, sometimes it's like I decide within a paragraph whether or not I'm going to read it.
Yeah, it's funny. I was thinking about like, how do you set expectations? And thinking about like, when I used to slush read, a lot of it was like how the character, like not necessarily what they were doing, but like how they were moving through the story. If you think about a whole bunch of people confronted with like a clock table for whatever reason, like they're the people who would decide, like, how can I take this apart? What are its components? A technical approach, for example, where there are other people who'd be like, this reminds me of time. And what is the meaning of time? A more lyrical, poetic approach. Mm-hmm. And so that tells me as I'm moving through the story, okay, what can I expect in terms of the way that people engage with the world around them? It's almost like the way you think about people engaging with the way around them. If you think about the people you know, like people carry their own stories with them. But if you had five friends and the same problem, they would all approach it a little differently and would probably give you a hint pretty early on as to how they would go through it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I think that how they would go through it is a lot of it. If you've ever had an experience where you encounter someone and it turns out that they were just having an off day, that's not the way they carry themselves through the rest of their life. But if you're reading the story and it's like, this is the experience you're going to have, but then the rest of the story is not like that. It can have this real disconnect. It's like, that's not what I signed up for. I often talk about writing as a drug made out of words, which is something that I got from, I think, Cory Doctorow, that writing is designed to hack the human brain, because that is how he would phrase it. Mm-hmm. But that with novels, what you're thinking about is a slow release, long acting drug. You're dealing with immersion, like often a cocktail. And with short fiction, it's a fast acting thing. It's designed for a very focused experience. You may go through different emotions while you're taking that to treat whatever symptom it is that you're trying to treat. Mm-hmm. But that you are picking it up for a reason. And that first page is kind of like checking the label to see, is this going to address the symptoms I have?
Yeah. You know, in terms of hacking the human brain, I think about it in terms of pattern recognition, right? I talk about this a lot. Human brains are really wired for pattern recognition. It's like how our cognition works. And so storytelling is our way of communicating patterns that we've observed to other people and to future generations. Like one of the things that makes humans special, quote unquote, is our ability to discover and communicate information and dangers across generational divides and communities. And so storytelling's kind of how we do that, right? And so what you're trying to do in the opening is hack that process. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get me to match to patterns that exist in my brain. So when I say the shape of the story, I want you just to like, I don't need you to tell me what's going to happen. I need you to hit certain markers that will activate my brain that goes, oh, I'm in a Law and Order episode, or, oh, I'm in a romance, or, oh, a farm boy is going to find a sword in like three pages. You know what I mean?
This is one of the places that I often reach for the mice quotient, because that means that in the beginning, I can have a small version of that problem happen. Mm. So if it's a milieu story, which is, you know, it's about crossing thresholds and navigating, then I can begin with a little bit of a navigational problem at the beginning. If it's about a character story, I can begin with a little bit of angst. It's not the big angst yet. If it's an event story, something small goes wrong. It doesn't have to be the big thing. A lot of times when you're reading horror, there's just something that is out of place and unsettling, but it's not like the haunted object has not yet hit the page. Mm. So often just saying like, this is going to be a story about status quo being disrupted. This is going to be a story about where we're going to have to be dealing with trying to be kinder to ourselves. Like these often help me make decisions about the kinds of information to give the reader in the beginning to set the expectations for what I want to happen later on in the story.
And I think it's really important that it comes down to perspective, you know, understanding the character's perspective, how they approach a problem. One of my favorite openings is Lee Child. Is the first Jack Reacher novel. I think it's called The Killing Floor. And It starts with him getting arrested in a diner. And the main thing that strikes me about it is it's a very staccato opening because you just feel Reacher tactically assessing everything in the diner of like, oh, this is like vulnerabilities. These are my entrances and exits as these cops pull up and start coming towards the diner to arrest him. And you just moving through his perspective tells me everything I need to know about this character, everything I need to know about the story I'm about to get, which is going to be a very smart man dealing with very violent situations. And that is precisely what the book is going to deliver for the next however many pages. And it's a great thrill ride.
And I think sometimes it is about like the character, and sometimes it's about the feel, like maybe the milieu, what is going on. I was thinking about Law and Order because you mentioned it earlier, and in the like original Law and Order, you know, openings are always two New Yorkers talking about something deeply New York-y until they stumble over a body.
Yeah.
And I think that like really sets like place is important. Like there is a New York atmosphere, especially to early season Law and Order that captures. Like it doesn't start with the victim. It doesn't start with, you know, the body's already there. It's them being like, oh, I can't believe I got to be in this rent-controlled apartment. Oh, no.
Forget about it. I'm walking here.
Exactly. And I think it's like, okay, that gives you a sense of what you are getting from the story. And it's like, if you liked this, you can get more of it. Mm-hmm. This is the expectation and we will fulfill it.
Yes. It's the welcome snacks.
Exactly.
So we're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about some more tools for building reader trust.
Where I live, the new year brings colder days. Regardless of my New Year's resolutions, my wardrobe should resolve to keep me cozy. And thanks to Quince, it's doing just that. A couple of months back, I picked up a plush cotton crew neck sweater for $50, and it is still my favorite. I have other sweaters, but this is the one I reach for. Quince can bundle you up in more than just sweaters. They've got down jackets, wool coats, Italian leather outerwear that's warm on the inside, even when it's really cold outside. Each piece is made from premium materials by trusted manufacturers that meet rigorous standards for craftsmanship and ethical production. By partnering directly with these folks, Quince provides top-quality clothing at a fraction of the price of luxury brands. Refresh your winter wardrobe with Quince. Go to quince.com/WX for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/WX. Free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/WX.
If you've been stuck on a 6-month wait list for a psychiatrist or are bouncing between online mental health sites trying to find medication support, Talkiatry was built for you. It's virtual psychiatry that actually fits your life and your insurance. It's a 100% online psychiatry practice that provides comprehensive evaluations, diagnoses, and ongoing medication management for conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, and more. Unlike therapy-only apps, Talkiatry is psychiatry. That means you're seeing a medical provider who can diagnose mental health conditions and prescribe medication when it's appropriate. All their 600-plus clinicians are in-network with major insurers, so you can use your existing insurance instead of paying monthly subscriptions or out-of-network fees. You'll meet with an experienced, licensed psychiatrist who takes the time to understand what's going on, builds a personalized treatment plan, and can prescribe medication when it's right for you. Your care stays consistent and evidence-based. Getting started with Talkiatry takes just a few minutes. Complete a short online assessment, get matched with clinicians who fit your needs, and schedule your first visit in days, not months. More than 300,000 patients have already found high-quality psychiatric care through Talkiatry. Head to talkiatry.com/WX and complete the short assessment to get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/WX. to get matched in minutes. It's the start of a new year, and that's a time where lots of us, I certainly do, step back and consider the systems we use and if there's a way to make things smoother, more efficient, or just easier. And if you're running a small business, a simple solution for payroll, benefits, and HR, like Gusto, lets you start your year off on the right foot. Gusto is online payroll and benefits software built for small businesses. It's all-in-one, remote-friendly, and incredibly easy to use. So you can pay, hire, onboard, and support your team from anywhere. Automatic payroll tax filing, simple direct deposits, health benefits, commuter benefits, workers' comp, 401k. You name it, Gusto makes it simple and has options for nearly every budget. It's quick and simple to switch. Just transfer your existing data to get up and running fast. Plus, don't pay a cent until you run your first payroll. Try Gusto today at gusto.com/WX and get 3 months free when you run your first payroll. That's 3 months of free payroll at gusto.com/WX. One more time, gusto.com/WX.
Welcome back. And as part of building our reader trust, I'm going to fulfill the promise that I made before our break, and we are going to talk about how to do that, because that's one of the important things that you're doing in the beginning, especially as a debut author, especially early career, or just in the honest thing is that if someone has never heard of you, even if you are five books in, you're a debut author to them. Mm-hmm. I had the joy of introducing someone to this author they had never heard of before, a little known author called Ursula K. Le Guin. and so for them, Ursula was a debut author and has to build reader trust. Yeah. So like wherever you are, you have to build reader trust. What are some of the tools that we can use to do that?
You know, I think part of it is, you kind of mentioned this in a previous episode, but you make a promise and you fulfill it, mm-hmm. right? You make some, you set some small expectation and then you pay it off. And that can be as little as like, I wanted to have a sandwich. Oh, I have a sandwich. You know what I mean? And just like having, just showing this thing in a very small way. And it's almost like animal training in a certain way of like, I'm going to set an expectation. I'm going to give you your treat, proving that I'm a reliable source of treats. Now I'm going to make a big promise and you're going to get that treat by the end of this book.
I think also like letting readers feel clever is always a great way. Who doesn't like to feel clever? So in a book in which you start with a sandwich, even something as simple as having a character gather the ingredients for a sandwich. So a reader will be like, oh, they're making a sandwich. I can tell like they got turkey there and lettuce and tomato. And then they're like, as I enjoyed the sandwich, just for 1 second, you get to go like, just like I knew they were going to do, which makes you feel like I get the story. What I expected from what you gave, you know, what all the ingredients is what it was. And I'm smart. And everyone loves that.
Because that's part of the relationship. It's trust, too. I'm trusting you to figure out that this is a sandwich one line before I say it's a sandwich. Right. And I think that's one thing that you should think about in reveals in general is let the reader figure it out right before you tell them. You know what I mean? Don't. If you're trying to completely surprise them, it feels bad. If you let them be like, this is a sandwich. Ha, I knew it was a sandwich. You know, I think that is a really satisfying interaction and builds that trust because it's the author saying to the reader, hey, I know you're a smart reader and you know that I know how to build a reveal, you know? And I think once you start building that rapport, that relationship between creator and audience, that's going to create a really fun experience of reading this book.
I think absolutely. I think with that, one of the other variations on that is specifically raising a question in their brain and then answering it, which I wound up doing. That's one of the tools that I use in With Her Serpent Locks, because there was a thing that I was trying to do with that particular story, which I like the surprise that, ooh, look, we're actually dealing with Greek mythology. But to start with, to get to the place where I could reveal that, I had to build reader trust, and I do it by saying, you know, hey, cuz, as my starting line. And that raises the question, who's talking? And and then within the first paragraph, I'm like, her cousin wanted to visit the asshole favorite grandson. So I immediately answer that question. And one of the things that I found is that if you raise a question and it's a small question and you immediately provide the answer and you raise it and you provide the answer and you raise it and you provide the answer, then you can raise a question and not provide the answer. Yeah. And at that point, the reader is like, ah, I understand now. They're going to give me the information I need at the point that I need it. So I don't need it right now.
Yeah.
And exactly. That's when you can start playing. But what I see the failure mode of that is people raising questions because they want to be mysterious. Mm-hmm. They want the reader to figure things out, but they aren't giving them the trust and to know that they're going to get the tools to figure it out. And so it just makes the reader feel ungrounded and unsafe.
The thing I'm always telling, you know, when I'm giving critiques on opening sections, I'm always like, just tell people stuff. Just tell people how your world works. You don't need to be mysterious about it. Just tell me, like, this is the mystery, or this is what they're thinking about, or let them solve problems early. And that lets you, yeah, have the big questions later. But I think there's such a feeling for, I see this a lot in TTRPGs actually too, of GMs being like, oh, I can't tell them this yet because that has to be the big reveal. And sometimes I'm like, no, you can just be like, this is the big bad. This is the villain.
Mm-hmm.
He's bad. We're going to spend the rest of the time chasing this man. And that can be a really fun narrative thing, right? Not everything has to be a surprise.
Yeah.
And sometimes the surprise can be how it happens, not exactly. That it happens. Yes. I mean, the entire Final Destination series is basically like, you gonna die. But how and where and like in what horrible way?
Yeah.
And I think about that with one of the, I think the very first story I ever published was a story in which I wanted there to be this like big surprise at the end, and it just was not working for people. And so I made it like much easier to figure out like that this kid is the son of the, you know, other character in the story that he hates. And then as you see him want to like hurt this person who is his father, then like it's bad because like you can see it coming. He doesn't get it, but you get it. And it's this feeling of like, I cannot stop this like Greek tragedy from happening between this father and son versus like, surprise, that's his dad, which is fine, but like just didn't have the same emotional weight because it kind of like, we'll get to this with endings, but it's like when you punch somebody in the stomach, you want to like wait a second to like watch that unfold before you run away. Like if you punch someone and run away, you don't know if the punch hurt them. If you punch mm-hmm. someone and stand there and watch them go, then you know it landed and then you run away before they can get you. And that's kind of what you want your story to do. But sometimes the surprise coming.
This is not
coming,
tactical advice. When you punch someone, you should just run away. don't wait. Don't
like in real life, don't do this.
In real life, don't do that.
Also,
just
don't
to be
punch
clear.
People. But,
unless you got to.
But, unless you like, have to. True. But like you punch people, like you want to like, you're spending all this time like gearing up for the punch that you're not even going to watch happen. And I think that can be, it feels like then it can never hold the force that you want it to, because like everything cannot come down to this one surprise.
And a lot of times giving someone an answer at the beginning and they are like, oh, how is that going to happen? The opening line of The Calculating Stars is, do you remember where you were when the meteor hit?
Oh, that's good.
And then what is that first chapter? The meteor hitting. So you have a piece of information that the protagonist does not have while she's experiencing that. And so you understand contextually what is happening as she is piecing it together. And it's one of the ways that I build trust with the readers for the rest of the story. It's like, yeah, I'm going to give you every piece. You're going to get to be a little bit smarter than her sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things you can do. The other thing that I think you can do to build reader trust is control your tone.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is another place, a failure mode that I'll see, that someone will have a tonal opening that's like this like really in media res, action-packed thing. And then the rest of the story is this contemplative thing. But mm-hmm. they've been told that they had to have something that was very hooky and interpreted hooky to mean action and fast. Or having a very slow opening that then is for a story that's super fast-paced. So I think sometimes that's a place that you can play with.
Yeah, I was thinking about those action openings because I do like them. And I try to think about like what makes them work. And a lot of times I think we can also hook into things that are common human experiences.
Mm-hmm.
A great way to kind of figure out, like if you have somebody who's nervous about giving a speech in public, you know, that is something that a lot of people can relate to. It makes the character, it's like, oh, that's a thing I get. And then like, as they're on their way to give the speech, the spaceship exploded. But like, while they're running through, they're like, oh, I'm sad the spaceship exploded, but I'm glad I don't have to give that speech. I'm like, I get that. That feels very, it feels really real to me, even though I don't know the character much yet. So I find a lot of times those action pieces work really well for me when there's something in them where the character has one driver that is something that I understand as a driver that doesn't require me to understand the world. It's something that is very personal instead of like, it is part of the world building.
Yeah, giving a really simple, relatable goal can be a way to carry somebody through an outlandish experience. But it's part of why those action openings almost never work. They're really, really hard to do, actually, because I don't care about this character yet. So I don't really care if they live or die or get hurt. I need to care about some aspect of it. You know, I'm thinking of like the Harley Quinn movie where she has her breakfast sandwich. And the thing that matters is preserving this breakfast sandwich. Mm. And so, I mean, that's like a comedy beat way to do it. But giving a really small scale achievable goal to care about lets you feel, understand the character in a deep way, because the character cares about something. And then I can see, how is she responding? How does she act? I learned who she is by her working through this scene of trying to save the sandwich and failing.
I think these are all really great ways to get people to trust you at the beginning. And to continue building our reader trust with you, I think it is time for us to move to a little bit of homework. So what I want you to do is I want you to review the first chapter of your work in progress. Make a list of all the story promises you've made. Keep this list somewhere you can easily refer back to as you progress through the story so that you can make sure that you're staying on track. And if there's a promise that you set up, then maybe you should think about how you're going to fulfill it. But start with the list. And now you're out of excuses. Now go write. Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. Your hosts for this episode were Mary Robinette Kowal, Don Juan Song, and Aaron Roberts. This episode was engineered by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. For more information, visit writingexcuses.com.